Couple of things about this first piece I'm going to play. It's an arrangement. Most of what I do, whether I'm going to do it solo or whether I'm going to do it with my trio, I approach somewhat like the old big band days. There's part of it that will be arranged, and then there'll be parts that aren't arranged, either some two or four bar breaks, or sometimes a whole chords. What have you. In other words, there's a structured arrangement leaving some holes for improvisation. And I think when I'm being very successful, you won't be quite sure which is which. And I think that's what's true of a big band, too. A big band is really smooth and the soloists are soloing within the context of the arrangement very well. You always ask yourself, well, did somebody write that out for him, or did he really come up with that off the cuff? That's, to me, is kind of the epitome of the artistry of improvising, is when you can't quite tell which is which. In other words, you might put it another way, you might say that the ensemble sounds so spontaneous that it could be improvised, and the improvisation sounds so organized that it could have been organized in front. So that's a little philosophy thrown in there. Specifically, this tune, I play it in B-flat, which is not usual for classical guitar. Most classical guitar arrangements tend towards the sharp keys. And it's a sort of discipline that I do for myself when I find a tune that works in flat key to be sure I don't forget that when I play with saxophone players and things like that on occasion, so I'm not completely befuddled. This is a tune called You Took Advantage of Me, which you might know, it's an old standard. And in arranging this tune, the melody spells out the harmony so well that really all that's left for most of the tune is to add a bass line, and you have a pretty full sounding arrangement. And the bridge is just a matter of harmonizing a scale-wise arrangement. And as I said, I'll leave a little space for improvisation. You Took Advantage. Thank you. the main part of the tune, the first A and B section, has to be treated differently because the tune itself would not spell out very much of the harmony, so you have to add a few chords and you have to kind of tell it along with the rhythm. Actually, that's what we're talking about. If you sit down to make an arrangement, you're talking about making something that has some motion to it, harmonically and rhythmically, and something that gives you a sense of flow. And this tune, in order to accomplish that, I decided that it did need some chords and a little more rhythm in addition to the melody. It's a Gershwin song called How Long Has This Been Going On?
Questions about what's going on so far?
Charlie, when you started out,
Well, you designed it with classical jazz.
What do you mean, when I started that tune?
When you started on the guitar. Where you the direction and where you go?
When I was playing guitar, I started when I was about 8 years old, and I started with my father, who played the guitar and the mandolin, and he played a little bit of everything. He played some what would now be called bluegrass music, and he played some popular jazz tunes and folk tunes and all kinds of things.
When you became serious about it, where was your head?
Well, jazz. When I was about 12 or 13, I got really interested in jazz and the classical. My interest in that didn't come along until I was about 20, 21.
Yes, sir. So, in the right hand, in the classical piece, you have all the fingering worked out. When you come to an improvised piece, you know, how do you approach the right hand and that fingering?
You said most classical players have the fingering, right hand fingering all worked out.
Was it? Yeah, it's usually pretty well worked out. Mm-hmm.
Well, you do, I guess you, like most improvisation, what you do is you draw from a vocabulary of things that you have done. You know, I think every improviser does that. You know, you start something and you might carry it to a different conclusion. I think that you could say improvising with the fingers does present a few complications because particularly, you know, you're up and down or so forth, so you're not as apt to paint yourself into a corner as you are with the classical guitar, but I think you don't try to improvise every possible thing. You just improvise those things that do work for you.
Your right hand fingers just fall naturally, do they?
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, if you're doing a scale sort of thing, you would alternate them the same as you would playing a classical piece. And most of the things I do are fairly what falls in. I think it's the nature of improvisation of any sort that if you work over an improvisation or recorded and went back over it, you probably could find some better ways to do much of it.
Why are there so few classical guitarists able to improvise? Is it the training they have, or?
Well, I think it's a question of interest. I don't think they've been involved in music that requires improvisation. There are some that improvise quite well. Illyrio Diaz can improvise. You know, if you get him at a party somewhere, he's quite good at it. He used to be a saxophone player. Breen can improvise a bit. There's another Venezuelan contemporary of Diaz named Rodrigo Riera that is an absolute whiz. You know, he can improvise. You can play the source studies and he can do beautiful things, right? Improvise with them. All play jazz too. He's one of the best improvisers I've ever encountered. So it isn't that it can't be done, it's just that not many people try.
But there's two kinds of improvising out there. There's improvising to embroider the melody, but whether it swings or not, that's another thing. Another side. Maybe they can play a lot of very pretty notes and very pretty phrases, but it might be swinging jazz. Not that it has to.
Yes. There are many different ways to approach improvising. I think if you were a classical guitar player, how many classical guitar players are there here? I take it you have done some? Yeah, a few. Well, if you're a classical guitar player and you are serious about it, I think it would behoove you to learn how to improvise in the way that is required of Baroque music, a good Baroque music player, be it guitarist, flautist, whatever, that has to know how to improvise those ornaments. That's a definite part of being able to play that music.
When you first started out,
yes,
like playing jazz and a classic instrument,
yes.
Well, how did people take to it? How did you make it succeed?
Well, I had the recordings is the best way to get known. I had some, my first playing that I did with a classical guitar was in the town that I lived in, which was Washington, D.C. And I had some reputation as a jazz player on the steel string electric guitar. I moved to Washington to study the classic guitar, and I did that. I didn't really play full-time professionally for about 6 years, except for, I did some professional work, but it was like in the theater and Saturday night dances and things like that. Nothing that was serious. But I did play some concerts, and so I had a reputation as a jazz player, so they kind of tolerated me to do a few tunes that way. And then I got, I finally did in 1956, get around to making a recording, and I got some play on the radio, so then they were really expecting that from me.
I was just going to ask you, Charlie, were there any teachers that were a big influence on you, or other top-line guitarists that were a big influence on your future and how you developed your playing? Was there anybody other than just yourself that had a big influence on your career?
Yes, there are many people who had a big influence on my career. I think it's very usual if you're doing something like this, when someone asks you that question, whether it be people in a clinic or the press, they say, who influenced your career? And right away you say, well, Django Reinhardt, Charlie Christen, Les Paul, and all that, which is in a sense true. You know, all these people did influence my playing, but the people who influenced my career were someone whose name you wouldn't know. I mean, some quite good players, like they're good players in Melbourne that if you go to Adelaide, no one knows who in the hell you are. And they're good players all around who, but for some kind of decision, some kind of break on their part, could have had a big reputation internationally, maybe. And I learned from these people. I learned from my father, first of all. I guess I'd have to give him a lot of credit, although he wasn't any great guitar player, but he taught me what he knew, and I think he played what he played quite well. You know, he kept good rhythm, and played with decent tone and things, so that was important. There were a lot of black blues players that hung around the country store there. I think I learned a lot from them about how they played music. Later, when I was in the service, I was in an army band with a gentleman named Marty Falloon that played some with the big bands in the 40s, and then when he got through with the army, he never went back to it. But I guess I learned more from him about playing jazz guitar. He had made a great study of Charlie Christen's style and so forth, and we used to sit around and he would show me things, you know, chord progressions and things that would have taken me years to figure out. So, like I said, there's a whole list of people who have been a big influence on me.
Were there any specific problems that began when you started on the classic guitar in the sort of jazz world, such as amplification and things like that?
That's a continuing problem. I think the classical guitar doesn't balance with any other instrument really, except maybe a recorder and a very light flute player. And it did have its discouraging aspects, but I was rather determined to make what I wanted to do with the guitar work with these things. Use microphones, and I've been instrumental in encouraging people to develop some pickups. We'll be hearing one that I've only had about a month from the Ovation Company that has some interesting new ways to amplify the guitar. I think when you put an amplifier on a classical guitar, it changes the nature of it, without a doubt. And what I've ended up with is something that's in sound between electric guitar and classic guitar, but it does allow me to play the guitar pretty much the way that I play. Some people have played steel string guitar with their fingers. Joe Pass does it very successfully, but I wouldn't I wouldn't want to do that because I'd rather be able to really play the guitar with a piano and stroke it, and you just can't do that on steel strings. You have to just brush it with the nail. If you're going to use nails, you have to just brush it and be very gentle with it. And that's too much like walking on eggshells for me. I don't care to approach it. In other words, what I'm saying is that the intensity that I strike the guitar is very much a part of the kind of expression that I want to put into the guitar, so that I wouldn't want to do it on a steel string. Did I answer your question at all? I kind of wondered. What? I rambled a bit there. Excuse me.
When did you first become aware of Lorenzo Almeida, and did you get to know him, or were you influenced by him?
Well, I became aware of him when he was with the Stan Kenton Orchestra first, I guess in the late 40s. I do know him. I'm good friends with him. As a matter of fact, we've worked together some, and there's talk of doing a recording. And I wouldn't say it's influenced me, because I mean, I was by then going an independent course, but I certainly have enjoyed knowing him, and he certainly has taught me some things. The recording we're going to do, what we're proposing to do, is to include a lot of old Brazilian music from the 30s, and sitting around home, he and I played some of that together, and I wish I could demonstrate how well he does that. It's something he's never done on record, but it's kind of a style of accompanying on the guitar that's absolutely fantastic that he does, and that I don't think he's known for at all. It's just a smattering of that on that record he did with Bud Shank. But we were planning on doing a record that way. And I hope to learn a lot from Lorenzo.
Charlie, it's essential to hold the guitar and your holding to produce the to make the hands work efficiently, right? I mean, that's what's happening.
I think so. Lorenzo holds it. He holds it over here.
How
would it affect me? Well, it would disorientate me because I'm not used to it. I really promote this way of doing it because I think it has an advantage. To me, when you hold a guitar on this knee, it has to do with the octave is on this side of your body, you know, and you're doing something that's inhibiting.
But it would also restrict your right hand technique, wouldn't it? You have to get your hand around.
A little bit. But I think that's a matter of adjustment. You can do that, right? Because, you know, flamenco players hold that guitar much higher, and a lot of adjustments. But to me, the main thing is that holding it on this way, you hold it so that there's no effort holding the guitar. Well, as you know, it just sits there. And if I were to get serious about the steel string guitar again, I would try to find a similar way, you know, a way that it frees your hands. Your hands are free, you know, you play anywhere, and your hands are not involved in holding the guitar. I guess to some degree, playing with a strap on a steel string guitar accomplishes that. You use a strap?
No.
You don't? But you have a way to hold it, I'm sure, so that you don't have to be hanging onto it with your hands, because your hands are for playing. I play the mandolin a bit for fun. I never have learned how to hold a goddamn thing. That's one of my biggest problems. I can't hold it, so it's comfortable.
Dave, what did lose interest in the steel string guitar?
When?
Well, yeah, and why?
Well, it wasn't a question of losing interest. I just gained an interest in the classical guitar, and when I quit playing about 1950, when I moved to Washington and started studying the Sophocles Pappus, from that time I really didn't work on the steel string guitar anymore. And after 5 or 6 years passed, see, all during those 6 years I didn't play jazz on the classical guitar, I just played classical music on it. And then my facility in that time, at the end of the 5 or 6 years, I discovered that I really could do more with my fingers, even playing jazz, than I could with the pick, because I'd worked on it. I don't mean, you know, I can take a pick now and I can go fast, you know, because there's certain things that are easy to do quickly with a pick, and the up and down, and I can play with a pick a bit, but I play much better this way. I keep better time. That's one of the aspects that I keep the rhythm better this way. And that it's a very personal thing for me. The things that you can do on this guitar are what I prefer to do. It wasn't a matter of abandoning the other. Mm.
Did you see yourself as being unique at all, playing jazz and that instrument? Or were there other guys who were doing it as well?
There were a couple of others. Bill Harris does it a bit. I found myself unique at a certain point. I found myself in a position, you know, like when I first started to get serious about it, when I was living in New York, there were a lot of jazz players that were quite interested in the classical guitar and put some effort. Chuck Wayne did, Johnny Smith, then just Barney, a bunch of people got interested to some degree in the classical guitar, buy one and fool around with it a bit, but I was the only one that really knuckled down with a teacher and spent some years learning how to get the sound out of it. So I did find myself in a unique position.
What were your aspirations at the time to work in a studio or to become a concert player?
Well, I guess I did. It's pretty hard. It's pretty ambitious for someone even in their early 20s to make such a drastic change and say, I'm going on the concert stage, you know. Well, I did. I played recitals in the libraries and small concert halls in New York and Washington, and the newspapers reviewed them and said kind things about me, because at that time it was a very unique thing. There was so few practicing classical guitarists that anything that anyone could do was amazing, you know. Now the standards are much higher. You know? If someone would go on a major concert hall, even a small one, and play the way I did about 1953, they'd be laughed off the stage. I think that's my opinion.
With the scope offered by improvisation and jazz music, do you find that music requires improvising on classical pieces?
I don't improvise on classical. On classical pieces, so I don't have much experience in it. Some of it would be transferable, I would say, and some would not. You know, I think that you have to be to some degree loyal to the music that you're playing. So the stylistic things that you do in that music has to conform to what that music is, or at least to your idea of what it is. You know, you wouldn't do that in a Bach piece, would you? You might.
Do you find a difference in the tone of quality between those who concentrate solely on the classic guitar and those who switch from picking the classic as?
Yes, you would find a difference. You would find many differences. The plectrum players who have taken the time to work on the classical guitar, Gene Bertoncini, do you know his name here?
Yeah.
And Bucca Pizzarelli, they both have paid some dues, and they both can get a sound from the guitar.
There were many records made by the New York earlier, men in particular, of guitar ensembles, where they simply used the plectrum on the back of the guitar. Four or five of them, all in, you know, as a like a section.
Yes.
But they obviously weren't playing with the fingers.
No. Well, that to me is an example of not getting a sound from the classical guitar. You hear on the television, I heard a commercial recording a while back that I was with Barney and Herb, and we heard this recording. It was a 100-piece orchestra, and very lush, and it had this pretty good-sized feature in it. I love classical guitar, obviously played by someone who didn't know how to play classical guitar. And I was kind of upset, and I called their attention to the fact. I said, you know, they could have called in Lorenzo, they could have called in somebody that could have gotten a sound. The guy's playing the line, but it's got no, you know, it's got no verve to it, no sound to it. I think that if you were going to decide if you wanted the full round of the classical guitar, I would look for one that had a proper wide neck and a, you know, a straight neck like you would want on any guitar. Don't get anything less than 2 inches, maybe a little more, is the least you want to fool with. And good, you know, an action that allows you to play without buzzing, and cheap. Because I don't think you ought to go around looking to buy the best guitar in the world when you start it. If you take it up and you have some success in a couple of years, then you can start worrying about what to look for and grill tone quality and things like that. Then you won't have to ask me. So I think cheap is a very important part of what the first one ought to be.
Yeah, but what quality is that improved classical guitar?
What?
What quality is that improved classical guitar?
What qualities? There, if I'm standing correctly, you're asking me, you know, as compared to the best, right? And the answer is varied. There are several different kinds of very good classical guitars, and they have different characteristics, and the player chooses those characteristics that please him best. You know, the traditional Hauser guitar in Germany had a thin, silvery kind of sound. And the Spanish guitars are usually a bit more mellow in sound. This particular one I consider to be a strong guitar, so that's one of the reasons I like it.